Our gospel today is from the first chapter of John, and it's on the second Sunday of Epiphany. It's calling of the disciples, and it's got those well-known words in here that I really couldn't escape, so I had to go with it. Is, you know, Nazareth, you know, at least Bethlehem, where Jesus was born, had something going for it, the city of David. But then he grows up in Nazareth. I mean, there's no place of a town. That's just nothing. That's just, it's kind of like a widening of the road with a gas station in Nebraska or something like that. Yeah. Wisconsin. That would be better. Today, that would be better. Anyway, so this... can anything good come out of this no place, you know, of Nazareth? I mean, it speaks of the strange workings of God. And then the disciple says, Philip says, come and see. So that's what I've been thinking about, come and see. And for some reason, I couldn't escape Christmas. So my sermon is, it's almost a Christmas. It's sort of almost. But, you know, it does have Epiphany stuff in it too. But Epiphany is still just the gradual revelation of this one born among us. So I think it fits. We'll see. And here's the lesson. The gospel. The next day, Jesus decided to go to Galilee. He found Philip and said to him, follow me. Now, Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. And Philip found Nathanael and said to him, we have found him about whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus, son of Joseph from Nazareth. And Nathanael said to him, can anything good come out of Nazareth? And Philip said to him, come and see. And when Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him, he said of him, here is truly an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. And Nathanael asked him, where did you get to know me? And Jesus answered, I saw you under the fig tree before Philip called you. And Nathanael replied, Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel. And Jesus answered, do you believe because I told you I saw you under the fig tree? You will see greater things than these. And he said to him, very truly I tell you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you.
So here we go. They took the trees down, but they didn't move the pulpit. So I'm used to facing this way, you know. And you're all sitting on the wrong side, you know, just so you're aware. God's beloved people. I think it was in the fall, maybe early winter, but Elizabeth Eaton, who's the new bishop of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, was in Seattle or Tacoma or someplace up there. I didn't go, but Eric went, and I think he mentioned one Sunday morning that one of the things she said when she spoke was, we are a both-and people living in an either-or world. And I thought that was good news, because I have known for a long time that I'm a both-and person, and I've wondered, you know, is it just me or there are others? And then she comes and says, we are, all of us are both-and people. And so I took that as good news. And this is why I mention it. Because early December, Mary and I went to Minnesota. I am on the 50th, I know this will be a surprise that I'm this old, but I'm on the 50th class reunion planning committee of St. Olaf College, and so we met a couple of times. And we met on December 4th, which was a Thursday, met during the day, and then that evening, all of us went to the first St. Olaf, the Christmas concert. For the weekend. It was marvelous. I mean, there's like 500 kids singing and this huge, wonderful orchestra and all that. It's just marvelous. And but it reminded me for some reason of another advent in the mid-70s when I was a young pastor in that very town in Northfield, and someone in the church invited this little group of St. Olaf women music faculty, had this group, and they came and did an advent program kind of concert for our church. And I still remember it. And one of the things was, I remember they were dressed in these simple, long, elegant dresses, all different shades of purple. This was so long ago, Advent was still purple instead of blue as it is now. And they had matching banners over their music stands and matching music folders, you know. I mean, and they were just beautiful voices. It was marvelous. You know, on the one hand, you know, it was just so beautiful. I mean, really classy. It was super well done, spiffy to the max. And I remember thinking about halfway or so through that program. On the other hand, see, they're singing about this guy that was born in a barn. Too poor for anything else, smelled of animals, visited by shepherds, riffraff, who even smelled worse. See, on the one, how does that all fit together? I think that when I was a working pastor and doing this all the time, on Christmas Eve, every Christmas Eve, wherever I was, I would put up a manger, a feed trough, some kind of stable thing. You know, and it's only been the last couple of years here at St. Mark when we actually had an architecturally designed stable. But every year I went through, as I was putting the hay in that stuff, I went through this same kind of conflict within me, my head. On the one hand, he said, I like things to look good, neat, nice. The only things I think that should be messy are your desk and your garage. Because that means, you know, both at work and home, you know, everything would be neat if you only didn't have all this really important stuff that you had to do first. So, now, stables and mangers and feed troughs and hay are really messy. And every year, I'd put that out, I'd pick up all the hay, and I'd get out the vacuum cleaner and start to, you know, clean it up, because on the one hand, I like things to look good and neat. But, you know, on the other hand, I would think, you know, stables and mangers are messy. Maybe I should just take the hay and kind of spread it out over, like, and, you know, be real. Leave it really messy. Now, I am not a Christmas Scrooge. On the one hand, you see, how can we celebrate throughout this Advent Christmas Epiphany season? How can we celebrate this God come among us as one of us? This feast of the incarnation, this light of the world in the midst that has come in our world in the midst of our darkest days. How can we celebrate? Well, I know. We got to do something unique and a little strange. So let's bring in an evergreen and put it in the middle of our living room and cover it with lights, maybe, and wreathe our front doors, the evergreen life symbol, deck our shrubs with these tiny white or colored lights, exchange gifts in his name. I know, you know, gather as many people as we can and sing these big concerts of celebration and joy. I mean, how else? But on the other hand, in the midst of all this decking of the halls, this Advent Christmas Epiphany movement, see, this is my worry. The Christmas Epiphany movement of God is away from glitter and glory. Come and see, the disciples say. But what are we supposed to see? God stripped off his finery and glory and appeared. I mean, how embarrassing. As a baby. God rips off medals of rank, puts aside titles, honors, and talents, and appears in his birthday suit. Veiled in flesh, the Godhead see, hail the incarnate deity. Things heavenly and earthly are gathered into one. The flesh and fold of God? When the gospel was first preached, Romans laughed at the idea of a God become flesh. Sure, you know, in those old times, you know, God might have a fling now and then with a mortal woman, but, you know, then they would always disappear to their better realms. I mean, you know your side of the tracks. Well, the gods for sure know theirs. God become human? Flesh? Carnate? Hilarious. You know, how many of us have this kind of sense of what so scandalized those old Romans? You dig under the stockings and the Christmas concert programs and carols, a gingerboard, you know, house recipes, and, oh my God, come and see. What is it? A baby. Not some silent symbol of benign blessing, but squalling cries. Desperate need for a warm breast. Joseph and Mary confused, baffled, and needy. A babe in a manger. A mother exhausted from labor. A father trying to figure out what to do next. God right there in their laps and not ashamed. Then from Bethlehem, they moved to this little no place called Nazareth. I mean, really now, can anything good come out of Nazareth? God's heart of love, you see, moved him to make choices that seemed absurdly unstrategic. If he had kept his wits about him, God could have hit the ground running. I mean, birthed as an emperor, or at least to wealth. A wise God would rub shoulders with the movers and shakers, attend presidential prayer breakfasts, speak at the National Press Club, huh? Even the devil could see that God was ill-advised here, and in the wilderness, to remember, offered Jesus the opportunity to pull rank. But Jesus declined. God trotted past the great and leapt unto lesser mortals, knocking them flat by his grace. Over and over, God plays the fool. He sends, for example, another, you know, the massed angel choir to a rabble of shepherds. Why send such a hard-to-book troop to riffraff that would have been wowed by one lousy, shabby angel with a bit of tinsel? I mean, God throws the party to end all parties for this shepherd rabble who had never been to so much as a kegger. God doesn't care whether they are wearing Brooks Brothers or bathrobes. Seems to prefer the smell of sweat and sheep and not abs- succession and soap. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? God doesn't worry about proper accents and good grammar. God has hidden these things from the wise and revealed them to infants. Searching high for God in mystical experiences, complicated revelations, asceticism, spiritual exercises. God is laid low, tucked rather under the mundane. Look down, not up. Dig to find the treasure buried in your very own backyard called flesh, your very own humanity. Three men again, you know, from noble families, mid-50s, wise, seek exalted experiences of God, willing to travel. The wise men looked high, not low, until their necks creaked. Dazzled by stars, they expect to be bedazzled by God. Check where? The palace, of course. Where else could God be? Many people spend their lives like those wise men, looking for God in exotic spiritual experiences, not realizing the extraordinary truth is right under their noses. This is what is most distinctive of Christianity. God has chosen to identify with our flesh, our humanness, even our pain. Come and see the wonderful news of a God who is unwilling, just unwilling to stand apart from us, who so must become God with us. I mean, think about it for a little bit. God, you know, like Bette Midler, could have chosen distance, you know, from a distance, contemplating from a detached divine reverie, creating inanimate objects and slinging them occasionally around the universe. Or God could sort of just be. He could have masked himself with sort of the passive face of Buddha, gazing beyond pain and the messiness of life. Sometimes I must confess, when I have been confronted over the years with tragic pain, I have wished I were a Buddhist so I could distance myself from the dust, the flesh, and the tragic messiness of the human condition. But no. The face of God is spun with joy, drawn by pain, creased with a greeting smile. God avoids esoteric understanding, wandering instead into the mud of identification and the dirt of costly involvement. In flesh, we endure heat, cold, toothaches. In flesh, we fear the bully, the cancer. God could not be God with us if he wasn't flesh like that. The flesh of the baby is father to the flesh of the man. The baby must be flesh so that God can be stripped again, trading his dusty swaddling cloths for the splinters of the cross. Come and see, the disciples plead. It is the time to dance to the descending scales of God, throwing off omnipotence and all those fancy words we use to describe him, and becoming flesh. The Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. God, closer than close. Come and see. Come to the grace. See the peace. For all that good stuff is the path to God. Remember, on Christmas Eve, when we lit our candles during Silent Night, we honored this light. Come among us that shines in the darkness, a light born unflinchingly into the world as it is, and offers us a vision of what the world might become. In the space in between, it is our work to look for the humanity of Christ in the humanity of each other, and to protect and nurture and cherish it in all and every form it takes.